Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Nathan Fox, that's Ben Olson. Together with the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT, we have a longish email here from M.
Okay, and M apologizes up front. I apologize for the long email. Okay,
you know,
let's see what you got.
The best apology is to...
cut it.
cut it down.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Okay. That's a skill, by the way, Em, that we can all get better at. I'm writing this email to ask about some tips regarding reading comp. To put it in context, I just finished the third year of my undergrad degree in Canada, and my CGPA... what's a CGPA? Is that a Canadian GPA?
Must be Canada, yeah.
Okay. A CGPA is 4.0. on a 4.3 scale. Also, I just finished this academic year with a year average of 4.2. Okay, sounds like you're killing it. I don't know if that means anything in the States, but in Canada, most law schools look at your CGPA and last 2 years. I started studying for the LSAT in late December 2021, and my diagnostic was 137. I spent hundreds of dollars on Kaplan books and Seven Sage, and after a month of diligent studying, 1 to 2 hours a day, my accuracy had not improved, and neither did my overall score. I then saw videos of Ben talking about the Demon on YouTube and decided to give the Demon a try. Since I've been with the Demon, my score has increased to a 155. Not great. Far from my target, but still a decent improvement from my diagnostic. Yeah, you got to focus on your progress. I wouldn't worry about the fact that you're not where you want to be yet.
I mean, after a month, well,
that's...
I think M is underestimating how long and hard this process might be. I mean, I know M from classes.
Mm-hmm.
And M asks a ton of questions, and they have a tone of like put upon a little bit, like you can feel the burden, like it's as if it's this person who's been studying for 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
But now what I'm seeing is a month of diligent studying with Kaplan and Seven Sage,
mm-hmm.
1 to 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 to 2 hours a day, that's great. But I mean, a month, 1 to 2 hours a day, no progress. Well, I mean, that's bad materials, but it's also just a month.
Mm-hmm.
And now kind of instantly with the Demon go from 137 to 155, which is an amazing amount of improvement in, like, I think if I'm
2 months, correct, maybe?
I think M has been around with the Demon for like a month.
Okay. Huh.
So,
well,
I mean, I think
M started in December, but yeah, I don't know. Okay.
Oh, in December. Okay. All right. It's been a couple months.
Yeah, a couple months here, a month there, and a couple months here. But anyway,
Couple months here. But 3 months. Still 18 points progress from the diagnostic, which is pretty damn good for 3 months.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, you know, people get so discouraged, and instead, maybe you need to be kind of counting your blessings a little bit.
Counting your blessings. That's a first I think I've heard from you, Nathan. That's pretty good.
I mean, I think a little bit of gratitude can go a really
long
way.
Oh, I don't disagree. I just felt like I was like back in Sunday school all of a sudden. Count your blessings.
Nathan's that one.
Great teacher, Nathan. Okay, so anyways. Yeah. Look, there are people who have been at it for a year, right? Sometimes. That's a great amount of progress. I'd be excited about that.
Yeah.
I'm averaging.
You should be excited about this amount of progress. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm averaging -6 to -4 on games. I finished the first three games with 100% accuracy, but never get to the fourth game. Don't worry, you'll get there. Constantly.
That's, by the way, just let me interrupt again, but like
sure.
Plainly,
yeah,
you just haven't put the work in yet.
No.
That's all there is to
there's,
it.
There's what? How many games again?
400, roughly.
400, yeah.
There's roughly 100 tests. We got 4 games per test. We've got roughly 400 games. And people think they've done a lot. And it's not that they haven't done a lot. But, you know, I press people all the time. I'm like, how many have you done? How many games do you think you've done? Rough estimate's fine. I don't care. Rough estimate. You don't have to count them up exactly. Just give me roughly, like, order of magnitude. How many games have you done?
20, Nathan. I've done 20 games.
Exactly. Yeah. People are like, well, I've done like 10 sections worth. So like 40.
You're like 10% of the games. Okay.
Okay, good. You've done 10% of the available prep.
And did you even do all those games? Because sometimes they don't do the last game and they never get to them.
Yeah. So you're not yet perfect on the games, which we say is basically, if you're not perfect on the games, then you're not prepared for the test. You need to get to perfect on the games, or else I think you're just leaving money on the table.
And by perfect on the games, we really mean you need to become perfect. Just you need to become perfect.
Yes.
Like entirely.
But on the LSAT logic games, I think you should be able to reliably score perfectly in 35 minutes or else you're not prepared to take the law school admission test.
Yeah.
I've seen so many people go from zero all the way up to perfect. And I know that it's not a matter of like magic knowledge or tricks. It's a matter of, did you put the work in or did you not put the work in? If you put the work in, you will eventually get to perfect on the logic games. And if you don't put the work in, then you might not get to perfect on the logic games. Sorry to be so like stark about it, but you know that it's like, okay, you've been at it for a few months, but in a few months, 1 to 2 hours a day, he has not done all of the prep for the games, right? So there's a big area of opportunity there for him to just do the work.
Yeah.
Get to perfect on the games. Okay.
M continues constantly. Okay. Constantly -7 on logical reasoning. I usually get 4 or 5 wrong. So I guess you're not getting to 2 or 3. And a disappointing -15 on reading comp. My major requires heavy reading and writing, so I can't understand why my RC is so bad. I usually finish 3 passages and get 50% accuracy. When I drill RC, I'm anywhere between 50 to 100% accurate. Yeah, you know, heavy reading to me is actually probably hurting you. Usually what that means is your classes are giving you lots of books that you have to read within a short amount of time. So you're developing this ability to skim and get the gist, and you're not being tested on the exact understanding of what's being said. You're being tested on a very general what kind of happened roughly.
Yeah, and people conflate like verbosity with, you know, technical accuracy.
That's so weird. Like, that's exactly the phrase I was going to say. That's the phrase I had in my head. Technical accuracy.
Have we been hanging out
too much, Nathan?
We do. We have spent quite a lot of time together. We were talking yesterday, you know, I one thing I do in my classes a lot now is I'll share my screen, I just newly discovered this because I ripped it off from one of our awesome teachers who does this, but share screen so that I can then like highlight phrases in arguments as we're going.
Yep.
And the browser feature I'm obsessed with, right clicking and just getting the definition of terms, because people didn't understand what, like, they're reading the words. They're familiar with those words.
Oh, these are not uncommon words. Like the example you gave me yesterday was increase, and people didn't realize that that's a causal verb.
It was beautiful. It was a beautiful moment in teaching history, because the phrase was something along the lines of recent studies have demonstrated that high sodium intake tends to increase blood pressure.
Yep.
I'll say it again. Recent studies have demonstrated that high sodium intake tends to increase blood pressure. And then it was like a comma. And I ignore everything that's coming after the comma for now. And I stop there and highlight it. And I forced the students to think about that with me. And I said, okay, I want to know if that's correlation or causation. That's a premise of the argument. Do we think that that premise is correlative, or do we think that that premise is causative? Are we talking about correlation here, or are we talking about causation here? And again, recent studies have demonstrated that high salt intake tends to increase high blood pressure.
Yep.
Or increase blood pressure.
Yep.
And the whole class just whiffed. I mean, just a total whiff. Like everybody in the class, literally 100% of the people who participated said that that was correlation.
Oh, I've seen that so many times. I'm sure you were getting it in the chat, right? Correlation, over and over and over and over again. Yep.
Yep. And it was like the echo chamber partially. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And I'm looking at it and I'm like, I think you're wrong, guys. In fact, I'm pretty sure you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I started looking up the definitions of the words.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, let's look up demonstrated or demonstrates, whatever it was. And it was like, basically it means to prove.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, so these studies have proved a thing.
Yeah.
Like, this is true. This is not, they're not just hypothesizing this. They're not concluding this. They've proven this.
Yep.
Okay, so we've got real good evidence here. And then I looked up increase. And yeah, increase. The first fucking word in the definition is cause. What does increase mean? Causes to rise.
Yeah. It's the tends to that throws people off, right? They think, oh, wait a second. It only happens most of the time. It doesn't happen all the time. So that
And I can't remember what the definition of that was, but it was like, has a tendency to, or has a propensity to, or something like that. It's basically all it means is it does this thing.
Yeah.
It has a way of doing this thing. Doesn't have to be 100% of the time, but it does. It does do it sometimes. But look,
the perfect example of this is smoking. It's not true that all smokers get lung disease.
No, but smoking tends to increase.
It tends to cause smoke. Yeah, lung cancer. People aren't getting lung cancer and scratching their head. I wonder why I got that.
Right.
You got it from smoking, even though it doesn't happen all the time.
Right. And even though people can get cancer who didn't smoke.
Sure.
The cause can be present without the effect. The effect can be present without the cause. Nonetheless, smoking causes lung cancer. It tends to increase your incidence of lung cancer.
Yep.
And it was real interesting because, you know, I spent literally like 10 minutes on this one phrase at the beginning of the first sentence. It was like the first half of the first sentence in the argument.
Yep.
And the students want to race ahead. They want to read what's coming next and what's coming next after that. And they want to try to answer the question. And it's like, but if you don't understand that they have provided a premise that is causal, then what are you doing? You're building on a shaky foundation from here. Like if you think that the premise was correlation and you're going to go into the answer choices looking for some kind of correlation, therefore causation flaw or something, you just didn't read carefully enough. But taking it back to M's actual email here.
Yeah.
M is like, do you see M patting himself on the back here with my major requires heavy reading and writing? It's like, I don't care. You think that should lead to automatic like high scores on reading comp?
Well, notice what it requires. It requires heavy reading and writing. So he's got to read a lot, but there are different kinds of reading. The LSAT requires actually very light reading. You don't have to read very much. It's a column.
Yeah.
It's one column on an old school 8.5 by 11 page. That is nothing.
How much do computer science majors have to read?
Yeah, not much, but they better read it really well.
Well, see, they don't have heavy reading and writing, but the reading and writing that they do is fucking code.
Yeah. You can't and mess by the up way, a sentence there.
When you go to law school, you are going to be reading code.
Like it's literally called code.
Yes. It is. What is the code? Like, what is the criminal code? What is the number of the line of the thing in the criminal code book that we're going to use to put this person in prison?
Yeah.
It is a code, a criminal code. And there's civil code as well. And you're going to be reading code and you're going to be writing code. Look what M is doing. I mean, it's perfect. By the way, M, I hope that you're taking this advice because, like, I know your problem. I mean, you're finishing three passages with 50% accuracy.
That you need to start sucks. Finishing one passage with 100% accuracy. Right. Once you can do that consistently, then go ahead, do two. But let's get that 100% accuracy.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to focus on accuracy. You're worried. I guarantee that M is more worried about the fourth passage that he's not getting to.
Yep.
Than he is about the 50% accuracy on the passages that he is getting to. And that is never going to be successful. Like, that is not going to work. You have to change that seriously. You have to start taking it seriously. You have to start picking answers that are justified by what is said in the passage. You got to stop making shit up. You're not reading the passage well enough. You're not reading it carefully enough. You're not reading it as if it were code. Like it either, no. You know, like a computer responds to, I mean, it either, you either tell the computer exactly what to do or the computer is like, can't do shit. Nothing. Like it's just going to do nothing or it's going to give false, you know, the exact wrong output.
Well, here's an idea. If we put these reading comp passages into a computer, it would get all the right answers because the answers are right. Just the 15 sentences. 15, by the way, M, and for everybody else out there, these passages have 13 to 17 sentences, average of 15 sentences per passage. That's all we're talking about here. So you got to get those 15 lines of code. If you put those in a computer, it would determine the correct answers for all these questions. No problem.
Yep. Yeah. You got to start picking answers that have better justification from the passage. You're just not answering the questions based on what it said in the passage.
Yeah. I want to go back to the thing, your 10-minute discussion with the class, right? I'm guessing that some people were probably thinking like, hey, why are we spending so much time on this? But if they learn that one idea demonstrates, or actually three ideas, demonstrates, tends to, and increases, and they walk away from that 10-minute discussion on those three terms, and they actually understand them now, they're going to see those same three terms over and over and over again.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Know exactly what they mean, as opposed to reading quickly, going, okay, yeah, I kind of see why C is correct, and then repeating the exact same problem on the next question.
Yeah, people, generally speaking, everybody needs to do fewer questions, but reach a deeper understanding of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just talking to a girl yesterday who was frustrated with her lack of progress, and I was reiterating that there are basically six questions you need to ask yourself, probably more. There's at least six questions that you need to ask yourself when you miss a question.
Yeah.
And I won't take forever, but those six are, why is the right answer right? Everybody does that, by the way. They think that they do that part. Why is the right answer right?
Yeah.
But the part they don't do is, why didn't you pick it the first time? And how are you going to avoid making that mistake next time? Those are the two questions that people just neglect.
Mm-hmm.
Like they look at it, they go, oh yeah, okay, I think I get it. They read the argument. They read the explanation. Yeah, yeah, okay, I see. I see why it's right.
Yeah.
Okay, but why didn't you pick it? Like, why didn't you see why it was right the first time through? And how are you going to avoid making that mistake next time?
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just going to go make that same mistake.
Yeah.
Then why is the wrong answer wrong? And people think they see that too. Oh, I see. Yeah, I see. Okay, well then why did you pick it? And how are you going to avoid making that mistake next time? There's additional questions that you could ask, by the way, which are, did I really understand the argument? Did I try to attack the argument? Did I understand the question? Could I have predicted the answer here? Now we're up to 10.
Mm-hmm.
10 different questions you could ask yourself. Mm-hmm. For every single question you miss.
Yeah.
And I invite people to imagine, I mean, this would suck for you, but imagine if there was like a little tiny devil version of me on your shoulder. You could have an angel, Ben, on one shoulder and a devil, me, on
you
the
can
other
do
side,
it.
On the other shoulder.
You can do it. It's okay.
Yeah, Ben Horn. Come to me. Come to the gym with me at 5:30 in the morning tomorrow, too. And then you got the like super sarcastic me on the other shoulder going like, well, but I mean, here's what I really want. I want you to hear our voice in your head saying, can you explain to me why the right answer is right and why the wrong answer is wrong and why you made both of those mistakes on the same question? I'm imagining myself with like judge's robes where I'm like sitting up there, you know, and I'm like asking counsel to justify, like, can you explain to me why you not only chose the wrong answer, but also didn't choose the right answer? That right answer, it was there on the page, wasn't it, counsel? Was it right there on the page when you did the question? It was right there.
Did you not read it?
Because you vouched for this. You came into my court and you vouched for this other answer. This one. Counsel, you see why that's objectively wrong. I mean, these words, they have meaning. They don't mean a thing that answers that question. That question also has meaning. Counsel, did you read the question? Did you read the argument? Counsel, can you explain to me, counsel? You see this passage, right? You understand that? You see the question? We understand that? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Do you see this answer you chose? Okay, do you understand how that answer does not answer the question correctly?
Yeah.
Why did you do that, counsel? What? Explain to me.
They could look back at me. I could be like, you got it. Keep going. I'm going to encourage you, but you got to answer the question.
Hey, man, we're not doing this for our health. We're not doing it because, I mean, it is like kind of fun. Like I get a little bit of like glee out of it because it is kind of a fun little game to play.
Sign up for the demon and help Nathan with his mental health.
Help me have fun. Yeah. but I mean, we're just ultimately, I'm not successful unless you fucking get it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I'm trying to teach you, I swear to God, it's at least half of what I do. I'm just trying to teach you that you don't have to miss these questions. You can figure them out. But it's on you, man. It is on you to fucking figure it out and answer the question correctly. I can guide you toward the understanding. There's some times where you're going to misunderstand stuff, but half or more of your mistakes, and I guarantee with M, I mean, look what M's doing. Three passages with 50% accuracy. Dude, you're not fucking reading it. You're not reading the passage. You're not reading the question. You're not reading the wrong answer you choose. Some combination of those three things. You're just not reading it.
You're not taking the time to digest it and really understand it. You're reading like you do for school.
It's like that line from Pulp Fiction where it's like, you saw me wash them. And then Samuel L. Jackson's like, I watched you get them wet.
The guy who's like, not that
actually
scene.
Wash it. It's when Travolta's washing his hands in the sink. He's got blood all over his hands because they killed Marvin. But he's washing his bloody hands in the sink, and then he takes Jimmy's hand towel and he's drying off his hand. And as he's drying off his hands, the towel is just completely covered really in blood. And Samuel L. Jackson's like, "What the fuck, man? What are you doing? Like, well, you saw me wash him." I watched you get them wet.
Yeah.
And it's like, you saw me read the passage.
Yeah.
I saw your eyes go over the page and you think you read it. But I then also watched you pick the fucking wrong answer.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean what it plainly says something wrong.
Yeah.
And more than half of the time, still, no matter how many times I say this, more than half of my time is spent encouraging people to read it again.
Yeah, read it again.
Try it again.
More slowly. Read only half the sentence. When people hear read again, sometimes they reread the whole passage or they reread the whole paragraph or whatever. It's like, no. Reread the first part of the first sentence. Do you get that? Now let's keep going. By the way.
Yeah.
You had two questions, right? One is like, why is the right answer right? And why is the wrong answer wrong? And then you had two sub questions for each of those. But I just wanted to say that if anybody tries to answer these questions And they say to themselves, oh, okay, I see why C is correct and B is wrong, because C is a better fit. I hear that phrase all the time. It's like, it's a better fit. It's useless. It's meaningless. And it means you've now probably walked into this territory where you've answered a question, but you haven't really answered it, but you think you have. So it gives you like satisfaction that is unfortunately meaningless.
Yeah, I could just see the judge. I mean, counsel, a better fit, counsel?
Can you elaborate on that? Can you clarify what you mean by a better
fit? Oh, what you mean to say is the right answer actually answers the question and the wrong answer completely fucking doesn't? Is that what you mean?
You mean the right answer is better?
So I can swear.
Yeah.
Yeah, ain't no better fit.
Yeah. Well, that's the definition of all the correct answers on the test. You could say that anytime.
Exactly.
Of course.
Yeah, it makes... Yeah, that's value free. That's not, yeah. That is never the rationale. If you think you understand it because it's a better fit, then that means you do not understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unless you can do better than that. Point is, you know, Em, I think you're trying to do way too much. You have no business finishing three passages. If you're at 50% accuracy, God, that's bad. I was going to say, try two passages with 100% accuracy. But Ben went all the way down to one passage with 100% accuracy.
Well,
and I think that's, you got to do one before you can do the next one. So, yeah.
Well, it's the same philosophy I have with my kids all the time, right? We have this nice meal sitting on the table and they grab like 10 chicken wings. And it's like, wait, are you going to eat all that? Oh, yeah, I'm going to eat all that. And then it's like chicken wing 6 and they're like, oh, I think I'm done. Can I go? And it's like, dude, now your chicken wings are covered in your ranch sauce, which is mixed with your, you know, corn slaw or whatever. And it's like, no one wants those chicken wings now. And we're not going to eat those. You can always take one. You could take one chicken wing, eat it. And there's a whole plate right there. You can take another one, right? Like there's nothing wrong with like, so M goes and does one passage, knocks it out of the park and looks at the time. Is like, oh yeah, I still got 14 yeah. minutes. Okay, fine. Carry on at that point. There's nothing wrong with doing more after you crush what you do. Anyways, M says, I had my heart set on going to school in Canada, but with my GPA and a good LSAT, I may have a chance at full rides at some T14 schools. Okay.
Seems like you're putting the cart way before the horse here, man. I don't know why we're talking. Like, what happened? I thought you were struggling to get any points on the reading comp.
You're right. Well, once I get past that problem, reading
comp, and now you're like, I'm going to get a full ride to a T14. Okay. Well, I hope. Wish you. I hope so. But
yep. What? I was originally born in the Middle East, and I thought that counts as URM. Underrepresented minority, but apparently it does not. Also, I have heard that LSAC is harsh when converting Canadian GPAs. So does LSAC have a grudge match against Canadian students or applicants? So I'm not sure how that will play out. Where are you getting this information?
Also, what are you talking about? I mean, you're just like, this is so wildly all over the place. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought you were writing, you know, this is like, it starts with an apology for the long email, writing in for advice on reading comp. And now we're getting into this, like just all kinds of weird speculations about, I'm not sure there's even questions here. So I don't know what.
Yeah. M continues. I'm also not sure if American law schools are less willing to give full rides to Canadians over Americans. No. I have personal connections in California, so a school like UCLA or Berkeley intrigues me. Okay, we got to get the score to get in there. The bottom line is that I have a lot riding on my LSAT, as I'm sure everyone does. Therefore, I need to do something about my RC reading comp because it is the anchor weighing me down. Well, I'm glad we got back to reading comp, but I think we told you what you need to do. You're going to read one sentence at a time. You're going to ace the first passage. Once you do that, go ahead and work on the second.
I want to be real, real here. This does not sound like super lawyerly to me. This sounds like somebody who's looking for shortcuts. Reading comp is definitely an anchor that is currently weighing you down. It mm-hmm. is one of your anchors. I mean, that's really bad. Like minus 15 on reading comp is bad times. You're going to become a professional reader and writer if you're going to be a lawyer. That is, you are going to be a gladiator of the English language. You're going to be the best reader in the room if you're going to be a successful lawyer. And right now, you're a terrible reader. Because of just lack of attention. You're trying to do too much. You're not really understanding what you're reading. Nothing's going in. And so then bad inputs equals bad outputs on the questions. And you're missing half of the questions. It's like really because you're just not being careful enough. You've got to learn. You got to slow way down. You got to focus on actually understanding what you're reading. You got to start getting 100% on one passage and then moving on to the next one. But I also, you know, like -7 on logical reasoning is not very good either.
Yeah.
And -4 to -6 on the logic games isn't very good either. And you've got like a lot of work to do across the board and all this other stuff. Like you've got good grades, but I just stop worrying about what's going to happen when LSAC converts your grades. I mean, get them uploaded, like have your transcripts uploaded and find out what that number is. But otherwise, stop thinking about it. Worrying about American law schools not giving full rides to Canadians, I've never heard of that ever. I don't think that's an issue. I think they want your LSAT because it'll raise their medians, because it'll raise their rankings in U.S. News.
Yep.
Yeah, you have a lot riding on your LSAT. And yes, everyone has a lot riding on their LSAT. You need to do something about that.
And, you know, where you're at in reading comp is not good. So I'm going to agree with Nathan here. But at the same time, you've come a long way. Just keep going. And look, if you can do what you did in the last 2 to 3 months, again, you're going to be in the upper 160s, which is a world of difference from where you are now. But how do you do that? You do that by mastering each individual sentence. That's all the LSAT is. It's a sum of sentences. You got
this.
And
it's a test of how hard you can work.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, lawyers work extremely hard. This is not the gravy train. This is a place where you're going to be successful in law because you love the work of lawyers and you want to work your ass off every day for the rest of your life. That's the people who are going to be successful in law. And you have an opportunity here, Em, to demonstrate how hard you're willing to work.
Yep.
But it could be months. You've got a long way to go. Diagnostic 137, you know, like that's those people. It's not usually not an overnight kind of a thing. To go from 137 to you're talking about a full ride at a T14. That's not a leap that is, you know, like just kind of people make it in 3 months.
No, but you're learning things that your major will never teach you, apparently, because.
Yeah. Whatever this heavy reading and writing, it's garbage. You know, it's not the right useless kind of reading and writing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not with any stakes on it. It's just like bullshitting about history or bullshitting about English or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, that's just not what law is. Law is like, what are the facts? What is the code? How do the facts interrelate with the actual law here? And you've got to really deeply understand what things mean when you read them. So you've got to learn a whole new way of like being much, much more careful.
Yeah, this is a tangent and then we'll wrap it up. But
all right.
I think that it's much of a tangent, but it's something we've talked about before, but I'm sure our recent listeners have not heard in a long time. Some of the best test takers when it comes to the LSAT are people who did physics or econ or even computer science. Why? Because they're so exacting. Those majors are not about heavy reading. They're about understanding exactly what's happening, whatever it is that they're talking about. And
yeah, I've always thought that computer science was the major that does the best on the LSAT.
Yeah, there was a study that was done and it was like, I forgot to include math, but it's like math, physics, these hard sciences. Econ too, which isn't necessarily as hard, but it's like it's requiring you to think about the world in an exacting way as opposed to a loose and fluffy way. And that works.
It's just not this like a lot of what happens in classes is this like lofty rhapsodizing about what you think the law should be.
Yeah.
But that's not what it actually like. That's not what it is on the exams. On the exams, it's like, well, did you notice this fact in the fact pattern? And do you know this law over here that controls these facts? And can you talk about how this law is going to or this fact is going to interact with this law? And can you anticipate the legal arguments that are going to be made on both sides of that? And it has nothing to do with like your fucking opinions of what you mean. It's not about justice and your ability to turn a phrase in some like highfalutin philosophy. It's just not about that. It's like, well, did you plug in this line of code to this line of code to create the output that we want?
Yeah.
And you either did or you didn't. Black and white kind of thing.
You did or you didn't. You did or you didn't. That's it. Yep. Email daily at LC. No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing. It's a great phrase to end on. You either did or you didn't. And that's how it is on the test. You either got the answer or you didn't. And you either understand why you did or you didn't. Or you figured out why you made that mistake or you didn't. It's not a gray area. Anyways, email daily at LSATdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.